Chapter 18. Ribbons of smoke were still seeping from the hangar mouth and rising into the downpour, but the rest of Villa Solis had obviously burned out long before the rains came. A couple of proton bombs had reduced the site to a smear of rubble and melted stone, leaving only a few ghostly foundation circles to mark where the habitation domes had once stood. To Ben's surprise, he felt only a hint of death in the force. Either the attack had occurred a very long time ago, which seemed unlikely given the fumes still rising from the hangar, or very few people had died in it. The lilting voice of the skiff's pilot and commander, a Duros junior lieutenant named Beta Ioli, came over Ben's headset, which he and the rest of the crew were wearing to muffle the roar of the oversized engines.
"Something bad happened here," she said. "Chief, you picking up anything?"
"Negative, ma'am," Tanogo replied.
A Bith chief petty officer, who had been in the Space Navy since before Ben was born, sat 3 meters back in the rover's cramped cabin, operating the snoop station used to locate and evaluate enemy targets.
"There aren't any signals originating within 300 kilometers, but we do have a bogey squadron headed our way from Warrow Field."
"Mytils?"
Ioli asked.
"Negative. Looks more like headhunters."
"Headhunters?" Ioli grunted. "You're kidding!"
"The planetary militia still uses headhunters," Ben said, quoting the intelligence file Tenel Ka had provided when Jason assigned him the mission. "They're probably curious about us."
"Nobody sends 12 fighters on a look and report," Tanogo repeated. "That's an attack squadron."
"Can't blame them for being cautious," Ioli replied. "Somebody did just level their Dutch's place. Identify us and see if they know what happened."
Tanogo acknowledged the order, and a moment later Ben noticed the weapons systems running through a test pattern. Either the skiff's young Twi'lek weapons tech had taken it upon himself to bring up the systems, or, more likely, the seasoned petty officer had quietly suggested it. After the rover had descended to an altitude of 200 meters, Ioli circled around to the front of the ruins, where a cluster of flooded craters sat in what had once been the villa's foreyard. Ben suddenly experienced a sensation of frustration, so faint and muted that he thought at first he might be imagining it. As they swooped over the craters, however, the feeling grew stronger, and he recognized it as a reverberation in the force.
"They were here," he said.
"Who?" Tanogo demanded over the headset. "Be precise, son."
"Sorry," Ben said. "Jaina and Zek. Those craters were a big problem for them."
"I'll say."
Tanogo's voice was sarcastic.
"Getting blasted back to your molecules is always a big problem."
"Chief?"
Ioli brought the skiff's nose up and wheeled around to land.
"That's his cousin you're talking about."
"It's okay. Death isn't what I'm sensing," Ben said.
As they swung back toward the villa ruins, the feeling of frustration and anger began to grow weaker.
"Turn back to our old heading, Lieutenant. I think that's the way we need to go."
Ioli started to swing the skiff back around.
"Ma'am, we don't have time for the kids' guessing games," Tanogo said. "If we're going to look around, we need to get on the ground now. That squadron is only 20 minutes out, and it just went from bogey to bandit."
"Why?"
"The squadron leader answered your inquiry about what happened here," Tanogo said. "She's saying a pair of Jedi bombed the place."
Ioli glanced over at Ben. Her Duros face remained unreadable, but he could sense her uncertainty through the force.
"We need to resume our previous heading," Ben said. "Jaina and Zek aren't here. I'd feel them if they were."
"Even if they're dead?"
Tanogo's tone was not cruel, just pragmatic.
"Ma'am, if we can't locate these two Jedi, our orders are to determine what happened to them."
"And to use Ben as a resource,"
Ioli said, continuing to bring the skiff's nose around to the heading Ben had requested.
Are you going to be the one who tells Colonel Solo we didn't trust his apprentice's instincts?
Tanogo fell instantly silent, suddenly pouring uncertainty and worry into the force. Ben felt both secretly thrilled and vaguely unsettled by the response, thrilled to realize that he had been invested with a certain measure of power simply by being associated with Jason, unsettled to realize that the reaction to this power was fear instead of respect. Once the rover had returned to her original heading, the sensation of frustration and anger grew more discernible in the force. Ben twisted around in his seat and looked back at Tanogo's age-flaked face.
"I'm not imagining this, Chief Tanogo," he said. "The force is real."
Tanogo rippled his cheek flaps in what seemed to be amusement.
"It's your call, son. You don't have to explain it to an old space can like me."
"Okay,"
Ben said, still wondering whether he had smoothed things over.
"Thanks."
He turned back around to find a rain-blurred plain of mud and grass sweeping past beneath the skiff. It was impossible to see how far the terrain extended ahead, but Ben knew from the intelligence file that the bog extended for more than 300 kilometers in every direction, farther than even Jedi could trudge through soft mud in so short a time. He closed his eyes and pictured Jaina's face, at the same time focusing his attention on the frustration he felt in the force. The ripples grew stronger almost instantly, striking him more noticeably from a direction about 20 degrees to their starboard. Without opening his eyes, he pointed.
"That way."
Eoli hesitated for only an instant before swinging the craft in the direction he indicated. The ripples grew even stronger, but now it seemed to Ben that they were coming from about 10 degrees to port. He pointed back in that direction.
"More that way."
Tanogo's snort came over the headset, and Eoli hesitated a little longer before correcting their course. Ben tried not to let their doubts trouble him, but the ripples began to grow weaker and more difficult to sense.
"Back the other way, I think."
This time Eoli did not correct the course at all.
"Then you're moving us back and forth," she said. "If you don't know where they are, we need to go back to the villa."
Ben opened his eyes and frowned at Eoli.
"Trust me, Lieutenant. It's not like I'm seeing a waypoint, but they are out there."
Eoli stared at him for a moment, then slowly nodded.
"As you wish, Special Agent Skywalker."
They made 2 more course corrections before the ripples strengthened again. This time Ben extended his force awareness as far as he could in that direction, picturing Jaina in his mind and trying to touch her through the force. Then suddenly, she was there in his mind with him, full of surprise and joy and relief and urgency. Something was terribly wrong, and she needed Ben to help her correct it.
"They're straight ahead."
Ben tried to open his eyes. Maybe he did, but Jaina would not release her grip on his mind. All he could see in front of him was her face, looking at once happy and worried and exhausted.
"I think they might be in trouble."
"When you say straight ahead, I mean straight ahead."
Ben extended his arm toward the image of Jaina in his mind.
"There."
The skiff banked. Hard.
"I said straight. I see them," Eoli snapped back. "But I'm not flying into a hillside, no matter who orders me to."
Jaina's image vanished, and a pair of tiny colored blades appeared in the rain at about the same altitude as the rover. They were some 50 meters ahead on Ben's side of the canopy, and slowly sliding starboard as Eoli turned away. Through the heavy weather, it was impossible to see the figures holding the blades, but Ben could feel Jaina's concern as the skiff continued its turn. He reached out to her in the force, trying to reassure her that her lightsaber beacon had been noticed, and then the blades passed out of sight. Eoli's voice came over the headset.
"Tanogo, how long before those bandits—"
"We've been flying toward 'em, Lieutenant.
Tanogo reported.
The interceptors will be in missile range in 2 minutes, and they'll be on top of us in 5.
Then we're in trouble, Ioli said. No, we're not.
Ben unbuckled his crash webbing and stood. Fortunately, the headset was wireless, so he did not have to remove it before starting aft.
They're Jedi. Just get us within 10 meters.
Ioli brought the skiff around so hard that Ben had to force-stick himself to the deck to keep from being flung into the fuselage. She decelerated hard and began to creep forward on the repulsor drives, at the same time issuing engagement orders to their weapons tech. By the time Ben reached the rear airlock and opened the outer hatch, Ioli had the skiff hovering alongside the hill. For a moment, nothing was visible outside but rain, fog, and mounds of mud and grass. Then one of the mounds suddenly flew off the hillside and landed inside the airlock, spraying tear-shaped mud drops across the viewport of the inner hatch. A moment later, the rover rocked noticeably as a second, heavier weight landed inside.
They're in, Ben reported. But take it easy. They haven't had time to—
Missile range, Tanogo reported. Launch!
The skiff tipped its nose up and shot skyward so fast that Ben had to catch a grab handle to keep from tumbling back into the Twi'lek weapons tech. A pair of dull thumps reverberated from inside the airlock, and for a moment he thought Ioli might have lost Jaina or Zek. A moment later, the inner hatch slid open, and the two Jedi stepped into the flight cabin, sagging in exhaustion and coated head to toe in mud. They were covering their ears against the roar of the engines, but even that did not prevent a torrent of questions that Ben could only half understand by reading Jaina's lips.
What's— hurry, she asked. Nearly lost.
Ben led them to the only passenger's seats available in the flight cabin, midway between Tanogo's snoop station and the weapons station at the aft bulkhead, and motioned them to sit. Zek obeyed gratefully, buckling himself in and donning a headset hanging on a hook behind his seat. Jaina took the headset hanging behind the other seat, but continued to stand and fire questions at Ben.
What are you doing here?
The skiff bucked as the weapons tech deployed chaff and decoys. Jaina's eyes went round, and before Ben could answer her first question, she demanded,
Are we under attack?
Ben nodded.
The Terrafonians sent some headhunters. Those lungworms!
She started to step past Ben toward the snoop station.
How many? Are they on a chase vector or an intercept?
Zek caught her arm.
Jaina, you don't have rank here.
He pulled her back to her seat.
And we've just been rescued, remember?
To Ben's surprise, Jaina did not jerk her arm away, or tell Zek she wasn't asking, or even flash him a dirty look. She simply sat down and reached for her crash webbing.
Sorry, she said. Guess I'm not used to being a civilian. I need to return to my station, Ben said into his microphone. Lieutenant Ioli will want to jump as soon as we're clear of the gravity well, and I'm the navigator.
Jaina nodded and waved Ben toward the cockpit.
Go. Let us know if we can help.
Ben started forward, shaking his head in amazement. Jaina was acting like she actually liked Zek. Maybe Ben's mother was right about those two after all. Clearly, something had changed between them. The skiff shook as the first concussion missiles fell prey to the countermeasures and began detonating. Ben sneaked a glance at the threat display as he passed Tanogo Station, then slipped into his own seat feeling immensely relieved. The wily chief had been exaggerating their danger just enough to assure a safe escape. The Terrafonian missiles had begun to burn out and drop away almost as soon as they had reached the chaff wall, while the old headhunters would not even leave the atmosphere until long after the rover had entered space and hit maximum acceleration. After strapping himself in, Ben activated the Navi computer display and brought up a schematic of the route they had taken to Terrafon.
"Retrace our inbound jumps, Lieutenant?"
"Do we have a choice?"
Ioli asked. Ben studied a maze of narrow, twisting hyperspace lanes that disappeared into the transitory mists with no indication of where they led. "We've got a gazillion choices," he said. "There's just no way to tell where any of the others lead."
Eoli nodded.
"That's what I thought," she said.
Ben plotted a bearing to their first jump and transferred it to Eoli's display, then set up a course retracing their route out of the transitory mists. By the time he finished, the rover had entered space and escaped Terrafon's gravity well. Eoli sounded the jump alarm, then a faint shudder ran through the skiff, and the stars stretched into lines.
"I can handle it from here, Ben," Eoli said. "Why don't you get our passengers cleaned up and debriefed? Colonel Solo will expect a full report as soon as we can make contact again."
Ben removed his headset. The rover's engines had fallen silent the moment they left Terrafon's atmosphere and collected Jaina and Zek, leading them through a bulkhead into the crew quarters. This cabin was as cramped as everything else aboard the little skiff, with a small galley and a sanisteam unit tucked into the two front corners and four bunks stacked behind a sleeping partition in back. Ben motioned Jaina and Zek to the small table in the center of the cabin.
"You must be hungry," he said, turning to the galley. "What do you want?"
Jaina raised her brow, dislodging several flakes of mud, then looked down at her filthy jumpsuit and snorted.
"I'm glad to see Jason hasn't trained the teenage boy out of you completely," she chuckled. "Until I have a chance to clean up, a cup of calf will be fine."
"Then you can have first sanisteam," Zek said, rising, "because I'm starved. I'll have anything, as long as it's hot and there's plenty of it."
He stepped into the sanisteamer to clean his hands and face, squeezing Jaina's shoulder as he slipped past behind her. She did not wince or roll her eyes or anything, until she caught Ben staring at her shoulder.
"What?"
she asked.
Nothing.
Ben turned to the calf dispenser.
"We're just friends,"
Jaina said. Ben shrugged.
"It doesn't matter to me. He's not even in love with me anymore."
"Sure," Ben said, filling her cup.
"Whatever you say."
He turned to give Jaina her calf and found her staring at the sanisteamer's closed door. Wishing the cup had taken a little longer to fill, he turned back around and reached for one of the sipper lids the crew used at their duty stations.
"Ben, I don't need a lid."
Jaina's tone suggested she knew exactly why he had turned away.
"What are you doing out here anyway?"
Ben put the calf on the table.
"Jason sent us."
"No kidding,"
Jaina deadpanned.
"Why?"
"Because you disappeared after you went to Terrafon," Ben said. "And then Tenel Ka started to feel like she couldn't trust anyone, so she asked Jason to send us out to see what happened."
"Then at least we gave her some warning," Zek said, emerging from the sanisteam unit. His face and hands were clean, but he smelled more than ever like a bog.
"Good."
"Warning about what?"
Ben asked. He punched an order for a Nerf loaf sandwich into the multiprocessor, then remembered how low Zek had needed to duck when he stepped out of the sanisteam unit. He added a bowl of brogy stew to the order and turned back around.
"Terrafon's not exactly on Tenel Ka's side, is it?"
Jaina shook her head.
"The Dutcha was already mustering her fleet when we arrived," she explained, "and when we asked to see her, she tried to have us killed."
"She must have thought we were coming to arrest her," Zek added, keeping a watchful eye on the multiprocessor.
"And that's why you bombed her villa?" Ben asked.
Jaina frowned.
"We didn't bomb anything. Her Mitils did that after the battle droids didn't work."
"The Dutcha bombed her own villa?" Ben asked. "She really must have wanted you dead."
"It was the only way to protect the sister she has spying on Tenel Ka," Jaina said. "She could strand us here by destroying our stealth X's, but now that Tenel Ka is the Queen Mother,
I'm sure that Dacha has done enough research on Jedi abilities to realize we can touch each other through the Force across great distances.
The multiprocessor dinged, but Ben barely heard it. He was too confused by what Jaina had said. If he understood the Hapen kinship system correctly, and he kind of doubted he did, the Dacha Galni's sister was Tenel Ka's chamberlain, Lady Galni. "Ben?" Zek asked, studying the multiprocessor with a worried expression. "Doesn't that chime mean my snack is ready?"
Sorry.
Ben placed the snack, it was two standard ration packs, on a tray and set it in front of Zek.
"But that doesn't make any sense. Tenel Ka used to be a Jedi Knight, right?"
"A very good one," Jaina said.
"Then wouldn't she be able to tell when someone was lying to her?" Ben asked. "She'd know if Lady Galni was spying on her."
"Are you saying she doesn't?" Zek asked. Without rising, he leaned toward Ben and began opening drawers beneath the counter. "Where are the spoons?" Ben retrieved a set of silverware from the sterilizing bin and handed it to Zek.
"Lady Galni was still with Tenel Ka when Jason sent me on this mission."
Jaina's expression grew alarmed.
"Then Tenel Ka doesn't know the Dacha is a traitor?"
Ben shook his head.
"I don't think so," he said. "The last I heard, she was counting on the Galni fleet to bolster her defenses."
"Blast it!"
Jaina pounded the table so hard a gob of purple stew slopped out of Zek's bowl.
"That's why the Dacha didn't want to talk to us. She's pretending to be on Tenel Ka's side, and she knew two Jedi would sense the lie."
"So Tenel Ka will think she's rushing to the defense, and then the Dacha can attack from inside."
"That makes sense." Zek nodded, then frowned. "What I don't get is why Tenel Ka can't sense that her chamberlain is a spy."
"Maybe Lady Galni can hide it when she's lying," Ben said.
"If Jedi can do it, most can't," Jaina said, frowning at Ben.
"At least not from each other."
Ben cringed inwardly, realizing too late that hiding lies was one of those special techniques that Jason probably did not want him talking about.
"Well, maybe Lady Galni can," he countered. "She wouldn't need to be a Jedi. All she has to do is make herself believe she's telling the truth when she isn't."
"Or not know she's lying at all," Zek added between mouthfuls. Jaina turned to Zek and asked,
"You think Lady Galni's not in on it?"
Zek shrugged. "You don't have to be a spy to be a security leak," he said. "Carelessness is all it takes."
"Yeah," Ben said, growing excited. "Sort of like the blind Willamander, only in reverse."
"The blind Willamander?"
Jaina asked. "You know, when you use someone innocent to put out false intelligence," Ben explained. "Only this way, you're collecting the information from someone innocent, and since she doesn't know what's happening, she's her own cutout, too. It's a perfect setup against someone like Tenel Ka."
Jaina looked vaguely worried.
"Where are you learning all this stuff?"
Again, Ben winced inwardly. Weren't other apprentices learning anything Jason was teaching him?
"It's part of my GAG training."
Ben drew a veneer of calm over his Force presence so Jaina and Zek would not sense his lie.
"We need to know all that spy stuff."
"Well, you must be studying hard," Zek said, "because I think you're right." Jaina nodded.
"It makes sense. The real spy is probably one of Galni's consorts. Tenel Ka would have no reason to talk to them anyway."
She glanced back to Ben.
"And Hapen noblewomen have a bad habit of underestimating male duplicity."
The comment sent a bolt of alarm shooting through Ben, but he did his best to stay calm, reminding himself that during their practice sessions, not even Jason could always tell when he was lying.
"I'm glad that stuff finally came in useful. To tell the truth, I was beginning to wonder if those instructors were making it up."
He turned his attention to Zek, who had already devoured most of his snack and was using the bread to wipe the stew bowl clean.
"You know how to use the multiprocessor if you're still hungry?"
Zek studied the unit with a ravenous gleam in his eye. "Oh, yeah."
"Good."
Ben pointed to the locker beneath his bunk.
"My spare flight utilities might fit you, Jaina, but Zek..."
"Don't worry,"
Jaina said.
"I'll stick Zex in the cleaner while he's Santa-steaming."
"Then I'd better go talk to Lieutenant Ioli," Ben said.
Ioli had not told him to report, but the last thing he wanted to do was say anything else to arouse Jaina's scrutiny.
"She'll want to send a report to Jason as soon as we're out of the dead zone.
Ask her to send one to Tenel Ka as well,"
Jaina requested.
"I don't know if that's a good idea," Zex said. "We know she's surrounded by spies, even if Lady Galny isn't one of them."
"We're just going to have to take that chance," Jaina said. "Tenel Ka needs to know about this as soon..."
"The Queen Mother will know about it as soon as Jason does," Ben said. "She's aboard the Anakin with him."
Jaina frowned.
"The Anakin?"
"The Anakin Solo, our new Star Destroyer," Ben said proudly. "She's in orbit above Hapes, and Queen Mother Tenel Ka is hiding..."
"Our new Star Destroyer?"
Jaina echoed. She stood and leaned across the table toward Ben.
"Jason named a GAG ship for Anakin?"
"Yeah. He thought..."
"What did he think?"
Jaina demanded.
"That he would drag our little brother's name into the poodoo pit with him?"
You'll have to ask him," Ben said, realizing there was nothing he could say to calm Jaina down. "I gotta go."
He retreated through the bulkhead and escaped forward. He was aware of the bad feelings between Jaina and Jason, of course, but he had not understood the reason until now. Jaina was just as volatile and unreasonable as Jason claimed. It was a wonder she had lasted in the military even as long as she had. But then the standards of the old New Republic forces had not been nearly as high as they were now that Jason and Admiral Neothel had reorganized the military. These days, someone as hot-headed as Jaina would never even make it into flight school, and he couldn't imagine how she had ever become a Jedi Knight. Jason was always telling him that a good Jedi used his anger, not the other way around. Ben returned to his duty station and reported to Ioli, then coded a burst message to be sent over the holonet as soon as they left the transitory mists. After a few minutes of thought, he also included a warning about Jaina's reaction to the Anakin's name. With a little forewarning, maybe Jason would be able to avoid another blow-up like the one that had opened the rift between them in the first place. After Ben finished the message, he remained in his seat, afraid to go back and give Jaina something else to be angry about. He really did not want to cause any more tension between her and Jason. But his motives were also selfish. With his father already threatening to end his apprenticeship with Jason, the last thing he wanted to do was give Jaina any reason to suggest to his parents there might be reason for concern. Fortunately, avoiding Jaina and Zek turned out to be easy. Their long trudge across the bogs had left them so exhausted that as soon as they had cleaned up and eaten, they climbed into bunks and fell asleep. The pair still had not stirred nearly a standard day later when the rover finally emerged from hyperspace in the star-spangled vastness outside the transitory mists. Tenogo quickly brought up the holocom and sent Ben's message. To their astonishment, they received a response almost immediately, even before Ben had finished plotting their course back to Hapes.
"That was fast," he said.
"Too fast," Tenogo answered.
He set to work decoding it.
"It's a CU message. Has to be."
This drew a groan from the usually silent Twi'lek weapons officer.
"CU message?" Ben asked.
"See you later,"
Ioli explained. "When a Star Destroyer has to change posts while her scouts are out, she drops a message beacon with rendezvous coordinates."
"Okay,"
Ben said, not seeing the problem. So I don't plot a course until we have the new coordinates.
That'd be too easy, son, Tanogo said.
It's pretty rare that a Star Destroyer moves toward the scout ship, Ioli said. And since reconnaissance skiffs don't carry a lot of fuel or provisions, and since we have half again our normal complement, Ben added, beginning to understand.
Right, Ioli said. It can be a problem.
They waited in silence while Tanogo finished decoding the message. Then Ben felt a ripple of relief in the Force.
It's not so bad, Tanogo announced. We might even get in a little R&R, if the lieutenant is feeling generous.
That depends on how long you intend to keep me waiting, Ioli said.
The message appeared on the cockpit display almost immediately. Recon Skiff Rover, proceed to Roku Depot for refueling and resupply. Await rendezvous or orders.
What about our message? Ben asked.
The Anakin is probably in hyperspace herself, Tanogo said. We'll have to keep trying and hope we catch her between jumps.
That's not good enough, Jaina said from the back of the cabin.
Ben turned in his seat and saw her and Zek emerging from crew quarters. Their faces still had pillow lines, and their hair was still sleep-tousled, but they appeared completely rested, as Jedi usually did after a recovery trance.
"We have to go to Hapes," she said, continuing forward.
"Those aren't our orders," Tanogo objected. "When Colonel Solo tells us to go somewhere..."
"Colonel Solo doesn't know about our message," Zek interrupted, "or the importance of getting it there now." Jaina slipped past Tanogo station and stopped behind Ioli's seat.
"You know how important it is to deliver our intelligence to the Queen Mother in time, and you have the authority to act on your initiative."
Ioli nodded.
"Of course, but the Queen Mother is aboard the Anakin..." "Not if the Anakin left Hapes, she isn't," Jaina said.
"A leader of Tenel Ka's courage and integrity is not going to leave her capital world while it's under threat of attack," Zek added. "Wherever the Anakin went, the Queen Mother will be staying behind to oversee Hapes's defense."
"So I suggest you act on your own initiative," Jaina said, "or we'll act on ours."
Ioli's small jaw clacked shut. Then she let out a snort of irritation and turned to Ben.
"What do you think Colonel Solo would want?"
Ben glanced over his shoulder at the uncompromising faces of Jaina and Zek.
"Well, that message is pretty important," he said. "And I don't think Jason would want you to get your crew killed by the two Jedi Knights he just sent you to rescue."
Jaina smiled at Ben, then winked.
"Good answer," she said. "Maybe Jason's teaching you something after all."